Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRD in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, AEG, We Make Fun, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are here to help you sort through the cardboard commotion to help you find the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today you have Katie Pills,
Melissa Delp,
Kevin Delp,
and Journeyman Dan
in the house.
Journeyman Dan, I am glad that you actually are here.
I am very glad I'm here too.
Oh, we were a little concerned. I got this text that said I'm stuck in the bathroom, and I'm like, what?
Which apparently is a thing that happens here.
Yeah, I did not know it was a thing.
I didn't either. But yeah, there's a bathroom, and if you pull the door, it's one of those pocket doors. If you pull it too far out, it actually comes out of the track, and you can't push it back in the track.
Yeah. So we all laughed when Kevin said, I just got a text from Dan. He's stuck in the bathroom, and he ran to go get him out. And Melissa and I are laughing, and then she says, I've actually been stuck in that bathroom too. I said, me too.
Yep. I refuse to use that bathroom now just because of my fear of not being able to get back out.
Yes.
Can you imagine if you were by yourself? Oh, man. That's like nightmare stuff right there.
So when I was a teenager, I went on a trip to Romania and we stayed with host families, and they lock all of their doors, at least in their house, had little keys that you would lock and unlock them with. So not the little knobs that I'm used to.
Right.
And so I took a shower, finished with my shower, and I could not get out of the bathroom. I'm trying the key. I can't get the key to unlock it. This family has like a teenage son and daughter, and super embarrassing. It took like 30 minutes to get me out of this bathroom.
Wow.
Because I could not get the key to work.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure if it was like one of those flat type keys. It wasn't a normal key either. So
there were many.
So it didn't have like a doorknob. You use the key to actually like turn the mechanism to release.
Yes.
Wow.
And so I do have a little bit of a fear of getting stuck in bathrooms now.
Wow. It's a thing.
All right. So enough bathroom stories. In this episode, we're going to be talking about games that we've been playing. And then we're going to have a few games with our Kickstarter conniption. And then our topic for today is spooky games, you know, since Halloween's coming up.
That's
soon.
True. And we should say Will, Sarah, Joan, and Chantel are on their way back from Essen, Germany as we're recording this. So just the four of us tonight, but hopefully we'll keep you entertained for tonight's show or today's show. So, yeah, games we've been playing. You guys had something on the table tonight.
Yeah. So we played There's Been a Murder. It is a collaborative.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, it's a collaborative card game where you are trying to basically flush a murderer card out of the hand of cards that are dealt. And there are specific cards. There's all sorts of cards in there, and there's several different ways to win. There's also many different ways to lose. But as working as a group, without being able to share much information, you're trying to figure out who has the murderer card in their hand and then slowly try to get them to get rid of their other cards or get a certain card put into their hand with the murderer to be able to win.
So what was one of the ways, because I played a couple of rounds and we ended up winning, and I'm trying to remember, like, I passed you a card, or how did that work?
Oh, yes.
Were you the murderer?
So, well, you're not actually the murderer. You're just holding the card in your hand. So there's no, like, hidden traitor mechanic or anything with this.
So it's not like, I'm the murderer, I'm trying to be found out.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. It is just basically a hand management game.
Okay.
So there's a card called The Informant, which if you have The Informant and The Murderer, you automatically just say, oh, we found him, we won. And I think that's kind of what happened. Something got played, and I forget what that was, but it caused me to hand you the informant, and then later in the game, she was able to get the murderer. So there's kind of some strategic, like, I could have given her a different card at that point, but I figured there's a better chance of her getting the murderer at this point. Because at somewhere in the top of the deck, I forget how far, you always seed the murderer card in. So you know that the murderer card's going to be in like the first half of the game.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I figured there was a good chance of her drawing it or somebody else giving it to her. And I just felt like that was a better shot to give that to her.
Yeah. And the more people at the table who know what cards are even available, the better chances you have of winning. So the more you can share information, you can't table talk.
Right.
But certain cards will allow you to look at other people's hands or swap hands. So then you have to keep in mind who's got what cards in their hands. What can they do with those? How can I pass things or manipulate things to get the cards together or get the murderer at the point where, you know, it can be discarded with a detective? That's another way to win. So it really is about a little bit about memory, but manipulating the cards in people's hands.
And you only have, like, you start with two cards, you play one, do whatever it says, it might make you discard the other, but when it comes back to your turn, you get to draw a new card. So you're always limited to one or two cards, really. And in that way, it kind of reminded me a little bit of, like, a love letter. There's not a lot of depth to what you're playing. You're just trying to remember, okay, this person had this card over here, so if I do X, Y, Z, that may help us. Obviously not competitive like love letter, but... Mm-hmm. Some of that feeling of the restricted choices in the way the game's played.
It plays 3 to 8 players, and you guys played with 5?
We played a game of 4 and a game of 5. I think it was more fun with 5. I'd like to see what it plays like with 8.
Seems like it would be a better, maybe a more fun game at higher player count.
Yeah.
Three players, I think so. 3 players does not sound like a...
No, and... There's a scoring mechanism at the end where how many cards are left in the deck will tell you how well you've done in the game. Like, obviously, there's several ways to lose, but if you do win, there's kind of this scoring, like, if there are 12 cards or more left in the deck, you're a genius detective. You've solved the case.
Cool.
You know, if you only have like 0 or 2 cards left in the deck, you know, it gives you like a really low score. So
Melissa and I played recently.
Oh, we should say the title one more time.
There's Been a Murder.
There's Been a Murder. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Melissa. The game that Melissa and I have played recently is called Oltree. O-L-T-R-E-E. But they have little like accents on the ends of the E's. So
it's a cooperative game. But it is based on a French role-playing game. So I think they set it in that world. Mm-hmm. And the role-playing game is called Oltree.
So it's like knights and castles and all that kind of stuff is the world that it's in. And they build it as a reverse tower defense game where you're actually trying to build your tower up because it's been in ruins and there's events. And it's a scenario-based game, I would say. It's not like campaign. Mm-hmm. There's like 5 or 6 chapters that you can go through, probably very connected to the RPG. And basically throughout the game, you're revealing the story and you're trying to build up your fortress and you are trying to collect resources. There's events that happen and incidents. I think the incident decks... and the Chronicle decks are probably the unique things in the game.
Yeah, so I would bill it as a cooperative game with story elements because you're working through this Chronicle, this story, to be able to beat the last chapter. So if you don't lose before you get to the last chapter, then you can do whatever the challenge is. And hopefully you've prepared, even though you don't exactly know what it's going to be. So hopefully you've prepared well and you can... complete it and have a good outcome to the game. Otherwise, you get the losing story.
And we just did a video review of that, so you can check that out on our channel. That's Oltree from Studio H. It's a newer company. What we heard from, this is actually a lot of the people, or not a lot, a few people from Matigo have basically not started, but are part of this new company called Studio H. So it sounds like they have some good pedigree. Anton Baz is the designer and... the illustrator for Oltree is...
Yes, I was going to mention, I'm like, and Kevin hasn't mentioned the illustrator yet.
Vincent Dutre.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really cool.
His favorite. Fun.
Yeah, it's really, he did a really good job. So, Dan, your girls were playing a game.
Yes, we were playing tonight. Yummy Yummy Monster Tummy from Lucky Duck Games. It is a game for 2 to 4 players and ages 6 and up. Like Lucky Duck Games does, it has the hybrid with an app. So in this game, it's just there's kind of a story there where you start with one pack of cards. You're going into your grandpa's attic and you find these little furry monsters come and they're hungry. So you have to feed them, and you have hands of cards that all have different colors on them, and not just primary colors, but lots of different colors and shades of colors. And they have a QR code on the back. So you have to look at the color of the monster, say it's green, and I have a blue, you know, vinyl record. Well, I can hold that card over my camera on my phone or device, whatever it is. It scans it, and then it says, okay, you fed it a blue. Well, someone else could then feed a yellow, and you're mixing those colors to make a green.
Cool.
You can just match colors, too, if you happen to have a close match. So you're trying to get as close as possible. I'm sure they have some kind of algorithm on the back end that says this comes to an 87% match or whatever. And you end up getting like 1, 2, or 3 stars, depending on how well you do. Mm-hmm. And you progress through this, and there are like different levels within the attic. And then you open up a new pack of cards and you mix those in, and you face different monsters that like let you draw a card or pass a card or just do different things. It was a lot of fun, and I could see it with my kids. They were just getting super excited. I have almost 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they were just loving, like, when you get to the end and the monster eats the stuff, the little star or the tracker goes up, and it'll go like ding, ding, and it gets really close to that third one, and it's like, oh, you only got 95%.
Okay.
You didn't get it all. So they were really getting into that. I played it with them for a little bit, and then I jumped over and played There's Been a Murder, and the two of them just sat there and they kept going.
This is built for 6 and up, is that right?
Yes.
But your 5-year-old is fine doing it?
Yeah, I think, you know, at some level it helps if you have an understanding of colors.
Okay.
So, you know, for her, a lot of it was just like, oh, I'll play this. And We're thinking, you have a blue card.
Okay.
And the monster was blue, but you played a yellow.
But your 8-year-old got it right away.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
And it's mainly card. I mean, with the app, but there's only cards. Are there tokens or anything in the game?
It's just cards.
Card based?
Okay. Yeah. And It comes with 4 different kind of storylines that you add, and the deck gets bigger.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like it'd be a really neat color theory game, color learning game for
kids.
Yeah,
for sure. I don't know colors. So when I look at like light yellow and light pink, what does that make? I don't know. That's not my strength.
I figured you didn't when you asked me, what 2 colors make teal?
Yeah. No, that is not my wheelhouse. But Olivia, my oldest, I was like, oh, man, what do we need for this? And she's like, oh, Dad, just do this and that. And I'm like, okay, clearly I need to work on this.
Clearly, yeah.
We had fun with that.
Cool.
She's probably been coloring things more recently than you have.
That is true.
Yeah. So on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Oh, wow.
From Yummy Yummy Monster Tummy or whatever it is.
Yeah, you got it.
Kevin and I played Tabanussi, which is one of the new games from Board and Dice. Mm-hmm. And it, I would definitely say, is medium heavy to heavy light.
Yeah, it's definitely on the heavier end. This is a game designed by David Spada and Daniel Tassini. This is definitely not a medium plus game. This is closer to the heavy side of games.
Yeah, so basically you are taking actions to lay down projects and then create buildings and trying to get on ships and ziggurat tiles. There's lots of different areas on the board where you can take actions. It's kind of interesting how you take your turn. Mm-hmm. You have an advisor, meeple.
An architect.
Architect, yes. Use the right terminology.
The tagline is builders of Ur.
So true.
Building Ur. So you have an architect.
So you have an architect, and then you have another builder, meeple, assistant. And there is a barge full of dice in that area. And you take a die, and the value of the die determines where your architect moves for the next round.
And there's 5 different districts, basically.
Mm-hmm. So if I take a 4, next round, I'm going to be playing in District Number 4, mm-hmm. which for us was the ships, I believe.
Yes, you're correct.
So there's a little bit of planning there of what dice you take is going to determine what you're going to be doing next round. The dice are also resources, so different colors that you're using for different mm-hmm. Things. We've only played it once. It was a learning game. We were kind of learning through the rule book mm-hmm. as we were playing. So I think it took from opening the rule book to finishing the game about 3 hours, I think.
We started around 6:30 and we ended around 9:30. Yeah. So that's 3 hours.
That's a solid game.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
The first hour was definitely more the learning how to play.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
And there's only three players. If you added a fourth player in there, that's another 45 minutes going on.
So what you're doing on your turn isn't very difficult, but there's lots of kind of little rules to remember. Like, oh, if I want to build this, I have to have done this before. Or yeah. I need, so oh, gardens have to go on right. water.
That's a good example because you're building little buildings in the district and you're basically putting your color on top, saying you're sort of claiming it. And then you can surround your buildings with different things like water and gardens. Well, like if you want to build a gardens, oh, you have to make sure you have water first. Oh, I can't put water there because there's no water nearby. So I have to go and find where the water is, which is maybe three tiles over, start basically getting water to my building and then putting garden on top. So I feel like the restrictions for what I'm trying to do was a little much.
Yeah, I think
it makes logical sense. I'm not bad mathing on that. I just felt like, oh, I really want to build as a gardens here.
Sorry, you can't.
And then the game's like, no, you can't.
Yeah, I think there were, like, even the scoring is, okay, this is going to get points, this is not going to get points. It's based on a different track that you've gone up. So your first game, there is a lot of front load of rules and how does this stuff interact. Mm-hmm. By about halfway through the game, I was finally, the light bulb was starting to go off mm-hmm. of, oh, I need to do this and then this to be able to get points. Mm-hmm. Some of this other stuff I'm doing hasn't mattered and won't matter.
What I like about a lot of games that are out there is the simplicity in rules that make logical sense and
intuitiveness.
Like Takenu is another game that Board and Dice has made, and it's very intuitive in that, oh, I'm just picking a die, I'm taking whatever action is in that quadrant. Whereas this game is like, I want to do this action. Oh, have I been able to complete all six requirements in order to do that action? Okay. I don't know.
Kevin was a little, he was looking through the rules and the section is building a structure or whatever. There are six things you have to.
I'm like what? I mean, that,
it's not necessarily six steps, but like six requirements,
yes,
or
requirements.
You can't do this, you can't do this. So it was just a lot to kind of keep in your mind yeah. during a game as you're learning.
Yeah.
I think we would definitely do better.
No. I'm not saying I wouldn't do better, but like out of all the games that Board and Dice has put out, like Te Tewakan and Takenu and Trismegistus, those games I've enjoyed even my first play a whole lot better than I did this one. Although I did like it better than
Taiwan
Tensuyu.
So what's your ranking right now?
Taiwan Tensuyu is still on the bottom, then Tabanusi is right above that, and then everything else is above that.
Okay. I'd definitely be willing to give it another try. I don't think it will leap into my top favorites, but I do think it's the type of game that your learning game is going to be a little slow and a little rough, and you're going to
miss
things.
Takenu's got the cool table presence with the obelisk, and it's got the interesting actions you're doing. The Teotihuacan's got the cool like upgrading of your die. The Trismegistus is interesting because you're transmuting your dice throughout the game. This one, it was like, I'm just not, like, what am I, like, why am I doing what I'm doing? Like, what's unique about this game? Why am I supposed to like it?
Yeah.
Why is it an amazing game? What mm-hmm. what makes it unique? What makes it great? What makes it a great game? I think it's a good game. I think it'd be fine. I'm not, like, thinking that I would like to play this game. I'd rather play the other games instead. Okay. But I'd definitely give it another try. Not like, I want to do you.
All right, so maybe we should move on from this.
Well, why don't we jump into our Kickstarter conniption?
Kickstarter conniption.
Today, episode, we are going to be talking about four games coming to Kickstarter the end of October. No one's looking at me to see who wants to go first. Who wants to go first?
I thought you were going first, Kevin. I can go first.
All right, go for it, Katie. Our episode sponsor, Rocket Cats. All right. Tell us about Rocket Cats.
Yes. So Rocket Cats is a battling card game that you use programming to do. There is a board and there are cats that are on the board, and there are two factions of cats that are fighting it out. They're trying to completely wipe out the other faction of cats to win the game. This game is going to have unlockable envelopes that add extra dimension to the game. So the first few games, you're playing the simplest possible version of the game. As you go, you'll be adding in extra cards that give you weapons or special movement or additional actions and those types of things. So you will be fighting. I think it can be a 1v1 or 2v2 in this game. There might actually be an option if you have an odd number of players. I will have to double check the rules on that one, but I believe there is an option for an odd number of players. When this comes out, you will be able to see Ryan and I are going to do a preview video for this.
And a playthrough, right?
And a playthrough is coming.
Cool.
Yes. So check that out. It is Rocket Cats by Gingersnap. And over to Melissa.
Roxley Games and The Op are teaming up to bring Marvel Dice Throne.
What?
So this is the Dice Throne that many people have already come to love, the dice battling game, but with a Marvel theme. It's coming hopefully the end of October at some point.
Please tell me there is a giant green dice that is the Hulk. I feel like that needs to be in there.
That, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Yeah, they're kind of announcing things on a schedule, so I won't be saying too much about it at this point, but we do have a copy, and we will be doing a playthrough at some point during the campaign. So watch our YouTube channel, and you'll be able to see it in action. And over the course of the next few weeks, they'll be releasing the names of the heroes, which ones will end up being in
Hulk.
Dice Throne.
The Hulk.
Yeah, let us know which Marvel characters do you want to see in Marvel Dice Throne. Kevin.
Kids Table Board Gaming is going to be launching their next campaign, and this is going to be Power Plants. And this is not about powering your city.
It's not.
No.
It's not Power Grid.
A slightly confusing title.
This is about you being a wizard, and you are growing a shared garden of magical plants.
Ooh, so plants with powers?
Yeah, plants with powers.
Power plants.
So on your turn, you're choosing one of the patch tiles from your hand and adding it to the garden, and you're going to be activating the tile for its plant power, or you can activate all the tiles that it touches for a slightly weaker grow power. And the tiles, we have a prototype. The tiles are like an acrylic. I don't know if that's what's going to be in the produced game, but they are pretty cool, so maybe they will be. And Will and Sarah have an overview video that you can check out on our channel, Power Plants Kids Table Board Gaming. Check it out. Journeyman Dan.
All right. Coming October 26th is King Hill. It is being self-published, and it's a two-player card battle game that includes worker placement with a fantasy medieval theme. You get to send out your peasants. You're getting resources with that worker placement aspect to the game, but you also get to upgrade them, hopefully make them better. And use your mages to learn magic, and then your troops, and you're basically building up an army and learning skills with your worker placement so that you can go defeat your opponent. Very much a card dueling game in that aspect. But if you wait too long, there's kind of a timer in the game, I guess, in that if you don't defeat your enemy in a certain amount of time, the mighty powers will come and basically just start ripping apart the continent. So you don't want that to happen.
No, that doesn't sound good.
We also, I believe, have an overview coming from Jonah, correct?
Jonah is working on that video.
Okay.
As soon as he gets back from...
I'm sure he's doing it on the plane.
Although it might already be done.
Okay.
He probably tried to get that done before he left.
Definitely check it out. If you're a fan of that fantasy medieval theme and some of the card dueling worker placement action, this game is going to have it for you. So check that out. King Hill on October 26th.
Well, that wraps up our Kickstarter Connection segment. We're going to move into our topic for the evening, which is our favorite spooky game since we are getting close to Halloween. That's more sci-fi, but...
Yeah, that was not spooky.
It could be spooky if you're scared of getting abducted by aliens or something.
There you go.
That's kind of got that feel.
Who wants to start us off with their spooky game that comes to their mind first?
Well, the thing that comes to mind first... is actually not coming to mind first.
Oh.
What does that even mean?
Like, I'm seeing it. I can picture the box, but I'm not... You guys have it.
Is it Zombicide?
Nope. It's another zombie game. Dead of Winter.
Oh,
you guys have Dead of Winter?
We do have Dead of Winter.
I promise you, that's the one that came to mind, but I just couldn't think of the name.
Left him.
I know. Dead of Winter, I played that once and really enjoyed it, so I tried to get it at any time I could play it when it came out.
What makes it a spooky game for you?
I mean, the whole end of the world, zombies trying to crush you and overrun. I kind of feel like that's spooky, but I just really enjoyed the theme, the feel of it as you're trying to go out and scavenge for stuff. And I think it kind of came out along with the uptick in like The Walking Dead and stuff like that. So
yeah.
To me, it felt as a game like you were in The Walking Dead. You had a lot of those components, but it also wasn't like super gruesome like you could do with a zombie game.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated that. But yeah, it was just a fun theme. I kind of like the traitor mechanic. Personally, I would probably rather not have a traitor because the game's hard enough as it is.
You can play with or without the traitor mechanic.
Right.
It's still fun even without it.
And definitely.
Most of the times we play it, we play without the traitor mechanic.
Yeah.
Because I think you have to have 4 or 5 players to play with the traitor mechanic. And a lot of times when we get it to table, we only have like 3 players. Yeah. So that's not enough to even play that.
Is it you? No, it's you.
No. So if there is the lower player counts, then you don't play with the traitor mechanic.
Okay. So. Yeah.
And don't roll a tooth because that's bad.
Yes.
It is. I've played it both ways. And... I mean, it's fun either way, but it's a lot
very
more,
difficult.
Yeah, it's a lot more disheartening when you get to the end and the traitor does something to just hose you and you're like, man, we did all that and we didn't win. I'd rather just lose because the game beat us, but I do understand that component.
It's like the thing and you're jumping on the helicopter
right
the last second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan.
Ryan did that. Ryan's also the one that won when we played our traitor mechanic Dead of Winter. And we had stockpiled food up for some reason. And Ryan was like, oh, I've got a ton of food, guys. It's okay. You know, we're going to make it. And we're like, yes. Well, then he turns out that it was his traitor mechanic goal was to stockpile food. And we were all counting on him because we're like, look how much food he's got. We've got this in the bag.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So he just kept it all for himself?
He kept it all for himself. And that Order. Was his goal, yes, wow. as the traitor, was to have a certain amount of food that he then didn't share with anybody.
Yeah.
That is terrible.
That is.
One of the games that comes to my mind when we say spooky games is a game called Gloom.
Oh, Gloom. Yeah. It's been a long time since I played Gloom.
Very long time.
Gloom is one of those games where actually is like probably one of the first games that uses those transparent sort of cards.
That's the first time I remember
like
seeing them.
You're putting cards on top of cards, which AEG has done really well with some of their games. But this one is you are in charge of a family and you are trying to basically make them sadder and sadder and worse.
Miserable.
Miserable is a good word. Thanks, Katie. And then, but everybody else around the table is trying to make your family happy.
Yes. Yeah, it's sort of the Addams Family kind of thing where they really want to be sad.
Yeah. You're trying to make them super miserable and then kill them.
Oh, and
you
kill
want them to die in their miserable state.
Thank you. Yeah, I forgot you had to try and
if
kill them.
If they die happy, you get no points.
That's right. So, yeah, trying to put negative points on them. I love how that mechanic works as you're adding cards on top of cards. And then the artwork sort of reminds me a little bit of Tim Burton-esque a little bit.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's got that feel to it.
Yeah. And all the cards have text on them about what the bad things are. And so if you're inclined to kind of tell little stories, you're like, oh, Sally has been pursued by poodles or...
Yes. Yeah. So you tell a story behind that? Yeah.
There's all sorts of of dysentery. You know, so it has how the person died or why they were sad or why they were happy.
It's definitely got that storytelling. If you enjoy a storyteller game, you can really get into that and go crazy. Mm-hmm. But if that's not your favorite thing, there's enough on the card where you can just kind of go with whatever it says.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of fun. Okay. I'm going to have to say it because I already started to say it. Zombicide.
Yeah.
And that.
Which one, though?
Oh, man. That.
Which one's the spookiest to you?
Spookiest? Mm. Oh, what is the spookiest?
It'll be your favorite. Just the spookiest Zombicide.
Ooh.
Is it the one with the black and white version? Night of the Living Dead Zombicide?
That one's pretty spooky. I'm trying to think.
Black Plague.
Black Plague's pretty spooky. I did not get some of the original Kickstarter minis that go with those that have special bosses, but I have seen some of those.
From Black Plague?
Yeah, and those were really good. So
really good spooky.
Yeah, they were really good. Okay. So I missed out on that, but those were really neat. So I don't know. Maybe Black
Plague is spooky because you're like in space with zombies and that's bad.
Yes, that's true.
Would not want to be in space, number one.
Zombies. Yeah, space zombies because there's nowhere to, you can't run outside because there's
no
oxygen.
No one can hear you scream.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that for sure comes to mind.
Okay. And you guys just like Zombicide.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Cool. So I also think of, I won't get into detail with it, but with like Arkham Horror, to me, that has a very spooky feel.
Oh, yeah, it does.
I haven't played Zombicide from a spookiness level. Which do you think is more spooky?
I think Arkham Horror has like the little stories that go with it, like what's happening.
The mythos behind it and all that.
And that kind of thing. Zombicide, you get the feeling that you're getting overwhelmed by zombies. Like they're piling it. You have more of a frantic feel building up. So it depends on what you think spooky is. The suspense part, the spooky part, or the feeling of we're about to die part. So
I feel that way with Arkham Horror too, but I know what you mean.
Oh, Zombicide then. You need to play with us and feel it then. The terror of we're about to be overrun.
What about you, Melissa?
I was going to mention Mansions of Madness, which is in that whole Lovecraft, Arkham Horror type of setting. Mm-hmm. It has the app that goes along with it. So there's some background music.
Oh, yeah.
It has...
The story
is read at certain parts, like the beginning and the end.
Even throughout the story is
read.
Well,
it doesn't have voice.
Correct.
It's just typed. But at the beginning and the end are actually voiced on the app. And some of the stories are spookier than others, depending on which scenario that you pick. But we've played that a couple times on Halloween or around Halloween as kind of our spooky game.
We used to play a lot Betrayal on House on the Hill.
Yeah, I was going to mention
that's
that.
That's the one I've played.
Yeah.
Which is in that same vein. I don't even know. I wouldn't really call it Lovecraft, but it's still in that same vein where you're in, you know,
the sanity that you lose in that. So that feels sort of the same.
Yeah, and that one's good for higher player counts, which is one reason why we'd often play it, because we'd have about six people in not too many games played more than four.
Yeah. It's kind of got the theme too with the haunted house, and you're in, you know, trying to explore it and you're not sure what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then, of course, then the traitor happens and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, another one that comes to mind is Vampire the Masquerade.
Vampire the Masquerade.
Yeah. That one, I don't know. I mean, that's more like factions of vampires fighting, but it has that same, I mean, it's that feels creepy. As all of the illustrations are very dark. It's not necessarily presented as horror at all, but it is a very dark, kind of gruesome feel to it.
What about Tyler Sigmund's Crows?
Oh, you know, that one is, I wouldn't necessarily think about it being necessarily a creepy game, but it does have a creepy aesthetic to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't come away feeling creepy when I played it with you, though.
No, that's
good.
Yeah.
No, it's...
Katie's not creepy when you play games with her.
Good to know.
No, yeah.
Unless she's dressed up like a zombie or something.
Right, yeah.
That's true.
Has anybody played Haunt the House around the table here?
Mm-hmm. I know the Meadows have and their kids have.
Yeah. So I will want to mention it. It is another kids' table board game, and it is called Haunt the House, and it just seemed like it would fit the theme very well.
Yeah.
I just have not personally played that.
Yeah, game. And I think it's more family/kid weight game. A new game that just recently came out is... The Night Cage.
Ooh, I'm glad you mentioned the Night Cage.
Smirk and Dagger, Smirk and Laughter.
Smirk and Laughter, technically, because it's cooperatively working together.
Anyway, it's a cooperative game, and you are all prisoners.
Maybe it's evil laughter.
Yes.
Smirk and evil laughter.
Cooperative game, you are all prisoners, basically in the dark, but you have a single candle, each of you. It's a tile-laying game, and as you move around the board, you only light the four spaces around your pawn. And there could be monsters or things like that. You're trying to collect keys and then all get to the gate. Mm-hmm. Each player needs their own key. But as you move and you step away from tiles, they disappear because they aren't lit anymore. So the board is constantly changing based on where your players are, and you can get attacked by monsters, which will blow out your candle, and now you can't see anything.
Oh my, that sounds creepy.
So, yeah, last time I played, I ended up jumping in pits a lot because it actually kept me from getting consumed by the monsters.
That's right. You'd come back on the board or something that way.
But yes, the Night Cage, the aesthetic on the box is very kind of spooky and
I think it's a good fit. I think a game that comes to my mind not right away, but as we've been talking, is Nyctophobia.
Mm.
This one is creepy in the sense that most of the players around the table have their eyes closed. Technically, you're wearing blackout glasses through the whole game.
Oh.
And all you can do is feel on the board these pieces, and you're trying to stay away from the vampire, right?
There's two versions. One's a vampire, the other one's an axe murderer.
Yeah, both of them I like to stay away from, personally. Yeah.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter. Either one's kind of spooky to me. But the spookiness, it does really, like, it really, you feel like, you know, you can't see. All you're doing is feeling the different path. The board is laid out in such a way where you can sort of feel... like different,
it has three-dimensional pieces.
Yeah, like trees and
fences
and different things on the board, and you're trying to move your pawn in certain ways so that you're trying to stay away, but you don't know where the guy is, so.
So one player is not blinded,
okay,
and that's the player who's playing as the bad guy who's trying to track down and get the other players.
Yeah.
But none of the other players can see, so they're kind of running around in the dark trying to collect things and get away from the murderer.
Yeah. The interesting story behind this is the designer of Nyctophobia, she had an uncle who was blind, and she wanted to play a game where her uncle could play, and she designed Nyctophobia where her uncle could actually play because he is blind. So
that's really cool.
Isn't that cool?
That is neat.
Cool story behind Nyctophobia. And I believe Pandasaurus is the company that makes Nyctophobia.
Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head.
Any other ones come to mind? Spooky games?
I cannot. I feel so bad. I can't remember the name of this game.
It's amazing, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Describe it to us.
It's a game, and it's got like Cthulhu/Kraken type feel. It's like you're trapped deep underwater and you're trying to get through a certain area. And there's like tentacles moving. Ryan and I did.
Oh, I don't know if that Kickstarter is even out yet. I know what you're talking about.
We did a preview of this game.
There's tentacle pieces on the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about.
I don't think I've seen it out yet.
Yeah. So, but you're trying to like make it through an area that's full of these tentacles, and the whole board is dark, and there's like, it's like deep water, which is creepy for me. And there's these kraken tentacles, and you're basically trying to not be eaten by this kraken. And anyway, that's kind of creepy themed. It was fun.
There's Paranormal Detectives.
Oh, from Lucky Duck. Yeah.
Where you have one person is basically the ghost, mm-hmm. and knows
who killed them.
Yes. Who killed them. And the other players are paranormal detectives and are playing cards for the ghost to speak to them. But these cards are like, draw on my back, or draw on paper, but use my hand. Use the little Ouija board.
Or strings.
Use string, and you have to ask, you know, maybe about the weapon or the murderer.
Or the sound. Make a sound of what happened.
I remember watching this, and although this is creepy themed, I remember there being a lot of laughing in this game. Yeah. As Will is trying to draw something on Sarah's back, and she's like, oh, it's this. No, it's not. You know, like, we're like, Will, I don't think you can do that. Well, she's not getting it. It's not even close. He's like, are you feeling what I'm doing on your back right now?
That was kind of funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
So if you want a spooky themed, but not actually a spooky playing game, Paranormal Detectives.
Any other ones come to mind?
I would throw out the legendary alien encounters.
When you mean by throw out, you mean
like put it
offer
on
it. Yeah. Offer it up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, not throw it out.
Legendary encounters is like the Marvel legendary.
Yeah, based on Marvel legendary's mechanic, I guess. But they did a bunch of different games based on movies or shows, and one of them was the alien movies.
I played this one. It is spooky.
It does. Yeah, it definitely has a sense of, oh man, the aliens are in the whatever compartment of the ship, and they're almost on top of us, and we have to take them out. So that it has that sense of urgency.
I totally agree.
For sure. And I just realized, I forgot they did a Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They did the X-Files. So we've got a bunch of different spooky legendary games.
I don't
know
if there's any good X-File games out there.
I haven't played this one, so I can't tell you if it's good. I know it exists.
I meant like an X-Files that's away from a game system. Like its own.
Oh,
like,
gotcha. Yeah. You know.
I just thought of this. Time Stories. There's a few Time Stories episodes that are creepy.
Hmm.
Like the
talking about the first one, the asylum.
The
one?
First one, the asylum one, is kind of creepy. And then there's another one, the Marcy case, is also
and the zombie theme one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, spoilers. I wasn't going to give that away, but yes,
I mean, it's been out for like 5 years.
Okay, Kevin.
Expedition Endurance has some
Expedition
that
Endurance.
One paranormal or
and that
creepiness.
One's got some creepiness to it. Yeah.
Yep.
So there's a few of those, and because you're invested in the storyline, it can feel kind of creepy as you're playing along.
Well, I personally really don't like spiders, so I find Vast, the Mysterious Manor, kind of creepy because one of the playable factions
it is
kind of
funny
spiders.
When we're playing this game and all of a sudden whoever's the spider gets to like pop a spider where Melissa's character is, she gets freaked out really quick.
Oh really?
No, yeah. Not a spider.
I think the spider is like almost like a spider queen, and she's trying to amass her spiders so she can come in as like the spider queen. Does that sound right?
It's been so
something
long
like
since
that.
I've played
it's like, oh, this is bad.
Because we had the upgrade with the minis, so it's not just like little
spider tokens. Oh, these are miniature spiders.
Yeah.
Which one of the Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle Earth, one of those campaigns also has spiders.
Yeah.
The big, Shelob-like spiders.
Yeah. Mm. I'll mention one more before we say goodbye, and that is Fearsome Floors from Friedman Fries. It's not really technically spooky, although it's got kind of fun theme, spooky theme, Halloween theme with like a Frankenstein character mm-hmm. that's moving around the board and you're trying to stay away from the Frankenstein. But the Frankenstein comes apart and he's got different pieces to his body.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's been so long. I remember that like somehow the tiles move or something so you can end up in different spots as you're trying to get to the exit.
You're trying to escape before Frankenstein gets you, basically. So it's Fearsome Floors. It's an old... When I mean by old is like 2010.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't think I'm familiar with that one at all.
Yeah. Charlie and Hannah have that, so we might borrow it for this time. Any other last minute spooky games before we say goodbye? Well, I do want to mention that we have some other podcasts coming up in the near future, and those will be end of the year sort of podcasts. Our favorite Kickstarters will be a topic, our favorite board games will be another one. And then near the end of the year, we'll talk about games we wish we played in 2021. So there's some topics that you can look forward to from our podcast. But without further ado, we're going to say goodbye, good night. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.